that 2/3 of all the trees, large and small, in development situations are still legally unprotected. However, in the interest of time, I urge you to adopt the Urban Forestry Commission's recommendations for immediate stopgap amendments, but I would even go further. May be too late now, but I'll throw this out. Lower the proposed new mitigation threshold for large trees to 20 inches in diameter instead of 30 inches. This will include many more mature tree species in the 1/3 preservation standard. A lot of species don't even get to be 20 inches in diameter. The public notice requirement should be increased to 45 days, I think, rather than 30 days, because there's so much, it's so complicated to get through it and to get an appeal going and with a neighborhood association and so forth. I agree with the Portland Audubon that all trees greater than 20-inch tree threshold that are not designated to be preserved should be subject to public notification standard and the mitigation schedule, and this based on the inch-for-inch planting replacement using a graduated no-cap system with larger fees than are now in effect. These new preservation and mitigation standards should be applied to trees on commercial and industrial lands, as well as the city and street trees, although after hearing about the costs to the Peabody, I'm not sure if this is okay. The amendment should be applied to lot sizes down to 3,000 feet, I feel. A comprehensive review of Title 11 must be made as soon as possible with added amendments that will truly preserve the city's mature tree canopy rather than just mitigating for its loss. Recent studies have proven that preservation of large trees instead of planting new saplings brings in a much larger return on investment for the city, the neighborhood, and the affected property owners. New homes and other buildings must be designed to include existing mature and older trees rather than excluding them. In closing, you all know the overall value of large trees to our fragile, rapidly warming environment. So we must strive to preserve all the existing tree canopy at all costs. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, commissioners. My name is Sam Noble. I also live in Southeast Portland. I want you to know that I'm not in the business of developing property. I work with computers. I really like trees, and so that makes me incredibly conflicted about my testimony here today. Every proposal before you tying mitigation fees to tree diameter is going to hurt me in particular and probably be detrimental to the long-term development of the city's canopy by disincentivizing the planting of large trees in the first place. In 2014, I bought my current home on Mount Tabor specifically because I was able to purchase an adjoining vacant buildable lot. The vacant lot has several trees with a diameter of about 20 inches and another that may one day reach a similar potential. None of these trees are more than 20 or 25 years old. I was told that one of the larger trees is a Douglas fir. It's a really beautiful tree. I can't tell you its growing potential, but I think that it could get really large. I have no plans to build anything. I wanted space for an unshaded garden for my dogs, maybe someday for my kids to play. Please understand, an empty buildable lot is an expensive thing, one I could only afford because I expect it'll still be in demand when it's time to move. But a developer will know which trees need to be removed and how much they're worth. Any offer I get will take this into account. I really want to keep my trees, but every day I'm going to wonder if I can afford to let them get any bigger. Large trees are lovely and amazing, but they're also a burden. They require significant maintenance, time, and money. And many of us consider this a fair trade. I mean, currently, like, it's well worth my while. But please don't make them a financial liability as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, thank you all. Next folks, please.
Are Ellen Gentry, Joe Brady, and Denny Barnes, and they'll be followed by Greg Snyder, Merle Reddish, and Bob Sollinger.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Ellen Gentry, and I'm representing the Multnomah Neighborhood Association. And I'm here to urge your support of the Urban Forestry Commission's original proposal to, reduce the lot exemption from 5,000 to 3,000 square feet. Commissioner Fritz and Salzman's proposals included some barriers to tree removal, but it did not respond to citizen input and that of the local Audubon Society asking for a reduction in the size of the lot exemption from 5,000 to 3,000 square feet. We in Multnomah Village have seen several examples in which developers have built on 5,000 square foot lots and have removed all of the trees, including large mature trees. And to illustrate the importance to the tree canopy of individual lots, a recent urban tree canopy analysis commissioned by the City of Portland, the City Parks Department of Seattle, found that most of the tree canopy growth in recent years has occurred on single-family lots and their street frontage. All the city's parks and their street frontage accounted for just 21% of the tree canopy, while 63% occurred on single-family lots. The implication is that single-family homes with lots containing mature trees are the core of the urban forest. So the question is, do we want to pack as much development into the city as possible while losing the tree canopy that's, you know, a signature of Portland and so important to the local environment? So I believe that your decision about whether to adopt the proposal to reduce the exemption from 5,000 to 3,000 feet will reflect your vision for the future of the urban canopy, particularly as it relates to individual lots. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that's certainly something that I know the next project will consider. There are a lot of implications to changing this. the triggering size of the lot, which we discussed back in 2011. So it's not part of the stopgap measure, but it's definitely something that we can look at in the ongoing project.
Hi, I'm Denny Barnes, and I'm representing Collins View Neighborhood Association, where I'm on the board, and I actually chair the Collins View Tree Committee. Yes, we have our own neighborhood tree committee, and we like to say Collins View is a neighborhood where trees have standing. Okay. We'd like to keep it that way, but we're horrified at the destruction of our native evergreen canopy these days. And the current tree code has really failed to protect the many majestic Doug firs and cedars and other native conifers that stand over our neighborhood. And this destruction is really affecting the quality of our lives. So let me just say, while we recognize the Fritz Salzman proposal is definitely an improvement, we feel most comfortable with the Audubon Society's proposed amendments that would afford the most protection. The things that our neighborhood association is really concerned about is we're not getting any notification. So most of the proposals seem to mandate 15 to 30 days. Gentleman had mentioned 45 days. That would be even better. It was said, why in the world do you want to notify the neighborhoods because they can't do anything anyway? Maybe not with city, but we definitely can talk to the developers and talk about mitigation. We're now have a grant from the Southwest Neighborhood Inc. to plant native conifers. We're trying to plant them faster than they're being cut down, and I'm afraid we're not making that standard yet. So we need to work at preservation as well. Allowing two-thirds of the trees in a developmental situation to be cut down without consequences, it's numbing. We don't understand that at all. We think all trees should be mitigated for. $1,200 doesn't begin to represent the value to our neighborhood. Adding mitigation based on caliper inch will improve that a little bit. But we're seeing dramatic changes. We're seeing summer temperatures going up. We're in December rains. We're seeing flooding because the big conifers are really good at mitigating stormwater runoff. They hold a lot of rain in the canopy, and the roots suck up a lot of water. Or with the rising commuter traffic through our neighborhood going to Lake Oswego, we're seeing more traffic noise, more air pollution, and, of course, big native conifers mitigate all that. We're supposed to be a critical link in the West Side Wildlife Corridor. Well, yeah, we take that seriously. Between Tryon Creek and Riverview, we would love to get some help in protecting these big Doug firs and cedars and hemlocks and grand firs that are so important. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You're
welcome. Hi, my name is Joe Brody. Thank you for this hearing. I spontaneously came here when I read about it in the Southeast Examiner, and I definitely wasn't planning on speaking. But I'm an artist in town. I live in Mount Tabor. I value birdsong and the canopy that I live under, and I think things are happening faster than we can even imagine. Yesterday I drove down Hawthorne and saw a row of stumps that were about 36 inches each, and everywhere I look in Portland, this is happening. I can't write it down fast enough, the number of incidences where trees are disappearing. And what I'm here because I'm a visual person. I work in symbols. Trees are a symbol of our humanity. They're like standing sentries to our experience as humans. And I think what I want to reiterate is the specifics of what people are talking about lowering the lot size requirement for people to be that they're allowed to cut down trees. There's a very small subdivided property in my neighborhood that a very large, probably 30-inch tree is going to be cut down on Mount Tabor, and I've seen eagles and hawks nesting there. And so I would really recommend you get as disincentivizing as you possibly can, because what we're talking about is preservation. We live in this city because it's different and special. We live in a forest, and we all appreciate it. And my personal project is that I'm going around researching heritage trees and documenting them visually, documenting the things that happen under trees every day, conversations, love stories. And, you know, these trees were planted when these neighbors, the Burels, who planted the Burel elm opposite the art museum, they had no idea that their tree was going to grow into an incredible canopy unto itself. It's a statuesque tree. And if we don't preserve these little, you know, tiny 20-foot trees that the developers can just wipe away with a dollar sign, we're going to look around in 100 years, and I think we all need to think about this, and we're going to find that we're just like every other city. And I look up to see those two trees standing in the mural, and I realize that Title 11 is a symbol. The one and the one look like a giant tree. And we are all here for the same reason. We love Portland, and I just want you to be as stringent and as outrageously diligent as possible in requiring developers to do the most that they can, because they will take what they can get. And, you know, I understand that. It's a dollar sign world. But let's just absolutely be reminded that we live here because it's special, and please be as outrageous as you can in your requirements. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll try to apply outrageous diligence to everything we do. That's a good term. Thank you.
Three are Greg Snyder, Merrill Reddish, and Bob Solinger, and they'll be followed by Elizabeth Collins, Robert Buell, and Paul Grove.
Welcome.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
My name is Greg Snyder. I live in Southeast Portland. I'm part of the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association, although I'm not here representing them. I also noticed this beautiful painting up here. I wonder if those trees are still there under the current code. I doubt it. It's been very troubling watching what's happened to the Portland tree canopy since I've lived here for the past 19 years. and it is currently just under siege. And while a property owner may technically own the physicality of a tree, they do not own the effects that a tree has on a neighborhood. This includes the creation of oxygen, carbon sequestering, cooling shade, neighborhood property values, the air that's cleaned by those trees, habitats for birds, mammals, animals. And these effects may go back decades and generations. And I was thinking about coming over here. It's like, how bad is this crisis? And I think it's so bad. You know, this summer, somebody held hostage three giant sequoias and extorted ransom from a neighborhood. I'm a pretty cynical guy, but I never saw that one coming. It's unbelievable. So I think that fines are not a deterrent. I don't think this plan is a deterrent. Those size trees, they're all still for sale. Money trumps all. And this is, you can lay those on a developer and that just comes out of their cost. I mean, it's not going to protect trees. Maybe one or two won't get cut down, but this is not what I would call protection. This is for sale. Trees are still for sale. I would say that what should happen is that there should be a requirement that no tree over a certain diameter, whether that's 36 inches, probably that's a good place to start, or 24 inches, be allowed to be cut down for development. If you can't, if a tree is on your property that you want to develop on and is over that size, you can't do it. And maybe you should just go find another place to build your building. If you do cut it down, you are not fined. It becomes part of your permit. You are not fined, and your permit is denied and rescinded, and you are not allowed to renew it. That is the only thing that is going to stop people that would hold trees hostage. That is the only thing that will stop greed in this case. The idea of notifying the neighborhood associations meet once a month. You know, a clever developer might just, you know, mention that they're going to take down this tree the day before, you know, the day after a neighborhood association meeting. 30 days rolls around. What can a neighborhood association do? I mean, really, they can't do anything based on this new plan anyway. It doesn't really give them any recourse to stop the tree. The best they could do is what happened in Eastmoreland, and people would have to take to the streets. So I ask you to look at this again and realize what this really is.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Meryl Reddish. I'm currently serving as the chair of the Urban Forestry Commission, and I also wanted to say thank you and great appreciation for taking really positive steps towards addressing this really difficult and complex issue. I participated in the planning, revision, and the crafting of the original tree code 5 or 6 years ago, and I was really pleased at how well the Urban Forestry Commission collaborated with the Planning and Sustainability Commission to produce a document and a new code that has a lot of good things in it and things that are working really well. And I'm willing to do that again. That said, I wish I knew then what I know now. And if that was the case, I would have taken a stronger, more activist and stood more firmly on the things that we compromised on and I personally compromised on back then. So today I have another opportunity to do just that, to take a stronger, firmer stand and really strongly urge you to reconsider and look at the Urban Forestry Commission's recommendations, mitigation at inch for inch, starting at 36 inches, the amendment to apply to city and street trees. You heard Vivek and David's rationale and research and reasoning for why we put forward that recommendation, and I ask you to think seriously about that, be open-minded, and take action. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for Portland Audubon Society. First off, I just want to thank you and all the other folks that have worked on these amendments. I know a lot of work's gone into it. I'm going to echo some of the things that have already been said today. You have our written comments, but I'll repeat some of them here. I think there are some good things in this proposal, but also some things that still need to be remedied. One is the inch for inch over 50 fee. That should be lowered to 30. 50 is just too big of a tree. How many 50-inch trees do we have in this city? Very, very few. If you lowered it to 30, you'd still only be capturing 20% of the trees in the city. And also, I think there is an equity issue here. You only find trees like this in very, very well-treed, fairly wealthy neighborhoods. They don't exist in poorer neighborhoods. I live in King neighborhood. We have very, very few trees, and over 10 years, I've watched most of them disappear. If you don't regulate down to 30, you're basically leaving those neighborhoods out. The ones that have the least will also continue to have the least protection, and they're the ones that are going to need it most as we get urban heat island getting more and more exacerbated. These regulations should be applied to all bureaus. We'd like to see BES allowed to mitigate itself, not pay into a fund because they do a tremendous amount of tree planting. I hear you, Commissioner Novick, but nonetheless, we do need to hold the city accountable to the same standards we hold the community accountable to. I want to point a couple of things out here in terms of Dutch elms. The city right now is proposing to cut the Dutch elm program, and that's not on the agenda today, but as part of the 5% cuts for Portland parks, we're going to cut the Dutch elm inoculation program. The Dutch elms are some of the biggest and most valuable trees in our city. If we cut that program, we will lose 3,500 of the biggest trees in the city within 3 to 5 years. Everything we're doing here today becomes a complete and utter joke. If we do fund that program, we can preserve those trees for at least 60 years, and that allows us to do replacement over time. So it's sort of amazing to me that at the same time we're having all this consternation about trees, the city is also proposing cuts that would devastate our urban tree canopy. So I hope we take a really careful look at that in the budget cycle. Last thing I'll say is we need a tree preservation standard. I agree with the gentleman to my left here. Some trees should just simply not be cut. Some are too valuable, and we need to find a way to get there. We protect other things, historical sites, historic buildings. Let's find a way to protect the trees that are really, really incredibly valuable to our communities so they can't be cut, period, so we can't be extorted. And so that we say that, you know, some things are so valuable, we're not going to put a price on them. We're just going to preserve them because they matter to our community. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you all.
But, may I just make a comment about two things? One, I noticed the Dutch elm cut and the proposed 5% cuts, and I totally agree with you. And I'll, you know, do whatever I can to make sure that that cut doesn't get implemented. On the equity issue, I hear what you're saying, but there is a competing equity issue, which is that the parts of the city without complete sidewalk networks tend to be the poorer parts of the city too. So there's something of a trade-off between our ability to put in sidewalks for people who need them and the cost of tree mitigation if we adopted the proposal you're talking about.
I think we're sophisticated enough to do both, honestly. I mean, I think there are places where you've got to figure out how to do it and how to balance those things, but we pit these things against each other too often, and it's disturbing to me that, you know, the environmental resources in the neighborhoods that need them the most, often because those are poor neighborhoods, is used as a justification for not protecting them. We need to find incentives and funding so that we protect those things along with doing the things we need to do to make those neighborhoods more functional.
Funding is a key part of that.
Yep.
Funding is.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay.
The next three are Elizabeth Collins, Robert Buell, and Paul Grove. And they'll be followed by Linda Robinson, Catherine Garvin, and Jessica, not sure the last name, on 41st. Anyway, she'll be next.
Okay. Welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Collins. I live in Northeast Portland. And I got very interested in trees when this was cut down a block from my house, and the resulting house that was built looks like this. No shade, a big, bloated couple of houses got there instead of this massive hemlock and oak. So that's when I became concerned. So, but my talk is about the mitigation issues. In this case, they mitigated with a few flowering, deciduous short trees, and in my opinion, that is not equal value to those true trees that we lost. They don't have any value to wildlife. As people have mentioned, with the tall firs, they have eagles and hawks living in them, but it's more than that. The insects care, the birds care, the mammals care, and if you mitigate with a little tiny plant like that, it provides zero habitat for the species that rely on the big old firs, hemlocks, cedars, everything we care about. So my wish is that mitigation required inch-for-inch replacement, but that it took into effect the mature size of the tree that's planted instead. if you can mitigate with just an inch. You could plant 100 little trees that account for no habitat, whereas if you care about the mature size, you may only have to plant one or two. But in the end, they will provide far more habitat than a dozen little flowering pears. So my wish is that the mitigation be reevaluated to provide better end result for the habitat.
That's a really great suggestion, which I think should be considered in the next process. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Robert Buell, and I'm sorry, I didn't know that I was going to get to speak today, but I want to thank you, and also I want to congratulate each and every one of you for the work you've done for the city. I know you have to deal with a lot of different people. So anyway, I'll try to make something out of this. I've heard some really good speakers today, except for maybe the two builders that left early for some reason. You know, you go by some of these areas of development, you see whispering pine, tall firs, wandering oaks, and there's nothing there. That was trees that were once there. And they got these little non-native trees planted there now. I'm working with the Audubon Society in my yard. I built my own house back in the early 90s. I had 18 tall Douglas firs and a lot of maples. I didn't have to cut anything down. They can do it. You know, they might have to take a shovel out to dig around some things rather than taking a big piece of equipment and just destroying it. I also have a concern, like a lot of these people I've heard today, we're seeing these big box houses all around, not just in my neighborhood, which is Multnomah Village, Gabriel Park area. And they immediately come in and cut every tree all the way around the perimeter. Just they're gone. I don't know why we can't limit a footprint size of a house on a lot, or I'd like to see a limited size of houses, period, for the carbon footprint that we are just creating, not just displacing those trees immediately there, but all the materials that they're taking to build these houses, the energy costs, the transportation, the whole nine yards. I know the city has got a lot of people moving in here. I'm not against people moving here. I love it. I grew up here. But we can't just tear everything down to just keep building and say we can pile more and more and more. I worked 30-some years in the construction industry. I worked in everything in this state. Lumber industry, but I'm also an environmentalist, and I believe in a conservative conservation type of growth. Like I say, I love trees and birds and wild animals, and the people that talked, the two gentlemen earlier, EcoTrust gentleman and the other, they know better than me, but you cut down one big Douglas fir tree, you can send it to a mill, it's worth about 100 times more being alive. Or even if it is a dead snag, then you'll ever get out of it. Anyway, that's about all I have to say. I just commend everybody here today.
Thank you. You'll be happy to know. I think you'll be happy to know we have a task force of citizens working on a revision to our zoning code that will come to the council later this year that deals with the mass and bulk of infill houses.
All right. Thank you.
Welcome.
Mayor Hales, members of the of City Council, for the record, Paul Grove, Portland Home Builders, here to talk about the proposal today and appreciate the opportunity to testify. I realize it's a very difficult spot where folks are at and on this, and appreciate council's effort to try to reach a compromise solution on this. It's not difficult, and you've heard a lot of testimony today. I want to highlight a couple of items with respect to the proposal and what we think would be enhancements moving forward on this. The first item is around certainty and certainty in the process. And I know folks have heard a lot about the process it took to get to this point and then revisiting the code moving forward. One of the items that we would recommend that council look at is the cap on those trees 50 inches or larger. We're certainly supportive of the initial BDS proposal, but would also welcome a visit to the enhanced, I think it was $9,000 figure that came out of PSC on those trees 50 inches or larger. We would, I think, be supportive of something along those lines. Certainly appreciate Commissioner Fritz's comments around the, if council does elect to go down an inch-by-inch path on those larger trees, the intent is to not increase it to $600 or more moving forward. I would suggest, though, to ensure certainty in the process, that if we do look at a 300 per inch measurement or fee, that that be tied and tethered to the sunset date, and so that it's in essence codified and fixed at that $300 figure.
To clarify, I didn't say that it was going to be for the next 4 years. I said pending the review that's going to be coming up very shortly.
I appreciate your clarification. I think then that would even, I think, strengthen our suggestion to have something tied to that sunset date. The second issue, and it was touched upon earlier, are the impacts to affordability. And I think we look at these policy issues in isolation too often, and we have to look at these collectively and what these additional costs look like to the cost of a home. And frankly, they are borne out in those costs of a home and ultimately in the purchase price. And so I think to understand that we have to have affordability at the tip of our tongue in any of these proposals, whether it be trees or otherwise, to ensure that we don't have the unintended consequence of impacting housing affordability, not just for current residents, but for future residents, in particular in that middle-income housing range.
Paul, can I ask you a question about that? Because we tend to look at this question in terms of assuming there's a subtraction of a house from a property in order to accommodate development. But I want to ask you the reverse for a second. When we bought our first home in Portland, in a street in northeast Portland that has 1920, the homes are mostly in the 20s, and a mature tree canopy, and in the summertime, the mature tree canopy is full and lush, and in fact, it's one of the great selling points of the street because it feels complete and it has a sense of history, and I think that emotionally we were drawn to the house in part because of the trees in the right of way and the house, and it was the combination. Just my luck, we bought the house and the tree collapsed into the house. And then the city billed me for removing the tree. So it was my welcome to Portland moment. But it still was part of what drew us to the street, to the house, and to the... So turn it around for me for a second and just tell us, based on the experience of home builders, what's the value to a homeowner of having a mature tree and tree canopy as you develop homes?
Mayor Hales, Commissioner Fish.
You don't have to do that here.
It's a legislative habit.
That's a relic of the state.
I'm sure it's a terrible habit that I would hope to break, but unfortunately can't seem to. I can't speak for each individual owner and homeowner. I think that
generally, because I think this sometimes gets lost.
I think that it's fair to say that individuals do have a connection and to a tree, and they see value in that as part of their kind of, I think, analysis, if you will, if they're looking at a particular property. We'll go back, though, and I know that you've heard from individual builders as well that have highlighted that, you know, if and when there are trees that are going down in these development situations, those get built into the cost, and those are going to impact affordability. Really briefly, two last items. I think it was touched on earlier as well, the density piece, and I think we're going to accommodate growth, and we want to be mindful of these density objectives. And as part of that, we want to ensure that the policies are reflective of achieving those density objectives and the effective date. And I'm not sure what the direction is on this front, but I would suggest that we look at something 60 to 90 days out. I think for folks that have pro formas that they can build certain things into it. And then I also think from a staff perspective, these things do indeed take time at the end of the day for them to ramp up and get up to speed on things. You know, we look forward to potentially partnering on issues with the city, whether it's the half street piece, whether it's the infill committee that Mayor Hales noted. And frankly, having been a partner with respect to the inclusionary zoning stuff down in Salem, unfortunately, under proposal today, we can't be supportive of it, but you do know those items we think
we would suggest.
Sure, please.
Have a benefit and when you talk about certainty, we think of certainty in at least two respects. One is having code that's clear and easy to follow, and second, having code that's easy to administer at the staff level. We've had some testimony about some hiccups along the way in terms of administering the code. Do you have any suggestions for us in that area?
At present, I do not, but I'm more than happy to get back with council on some suggestions.
Because I think it's both sides of the ledger. It's whatever changes the code we agree to also have to be easy to interpret and easy to follow, and that regardless of where we land in terms of the restrictions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I add something really quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, with our growth and everything, I'm just dismayed at seeing all the luxury houses, people living good, and I've never seen so many people in the city growing up here living in tents. I see it now, and you can walk from a nice neighborhood and you can walk down the street and see people sleeping, and there are sleeping bags there, and it's just saddening me, Rob.
It is. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you all. Okay, who do we have?
Next three are Linda Robinson, Catherine Garvin, and Jessica on 41st Avenue. And then the last two I had signed up who will be next are Eileen Stark and Ted Labby.
Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm Linda Robinson, and today I have a couple of my hats on. The Hazelwood Neighborhood Association, I chair the Parks and Environment Committee, and I'm also involved on the board of Gateway One, which is the new name for the Gateway Eco District. So I wanted to mention that I, too, was one of the people who was on the task force that spent a year or two, a few years back, putting together this plan that led to the Title 11 new code. And it has changed a little over the time, and I appreciate the fact that you're trying to fix some of the one of the problems that seems to have come up as one of the major stumbling blocks in the as it went forward. I did want to say one thing about the affordable housing kind of issue. You know, people need both livability and affordability. I live in East Portland, which is where we have a lot of affordable housing, and I live in housing that's relatively affordable compared to the rest of the city. And one of the criteria my husband and I had was that we wanted a property with mature trees, and you know, we were willing to give up some other things if we could have some mature trees. So one of the things, I was really concerned when I saw the charts about the jump in cost when you go from a 49-inch tree to a 50-inch tree. It looked to me like it was up to $4,800 for a 49-inch tree, but suddenly it was up to $15,000 for a 50-inch tree. And I have some concern, particularly I agree with Audubon and others, that area between 36 inches and 50 inches, maybe it should be a little more gradually stepped up. It just seemed like a strange jump to me, and especially since a lot of trees never get beyond 36 inches, even when they're mature. I would like to see this applied to city trees as well for a couple of reasons. In the Gateway area, the Gateway Urban Renewal area, I think we're lucky if we have 10 large trees, and I would say that at least half of those are on city property. Some of those are on PDC property, which they have purchased for redevelopment. To me, those trees should be covered like any other developable property. I mean, I understand the limitations and the concerns when there's one in the right of way that really shouldn't have been planted there in the first place. But these are properties that are slated to be developed, and the trees. We have a very large Atlas cedar on a property that PDC owns. We tried to make it a heritage tree. They would have no part of it. They intended to cut it down. So eventually. So I have some real concerns about city trees not being covered.
Linda, can I just follow up on that for a second? Because you're describing a situation where PDC has some land and then either sells it or leases it to a third party who develops it, which is a little different than the issue we've been taking up in terms of city bureaus as developers or taking action. And I don't know whether the sponsors consider that distinction or whether that's something that merits a little more of a look. Because PDC technically doesn't develop things. It contracts with third parties.
Other people.
And either sells land or leases land.
Right.
And I think you're hitting upon a third category.
Yeah.
that, and I think we're all nodding because we're not sure where it fits. So I think that's something we
because
need to
they own
at.
A number of properties in the Lentz area, yeah. The Gateway area, and many of those have trees of significant.
And one of the things I'd want to know is, because they start as city-owned property, does the rules that apply in essence
still
pass
cover
through
it
to a private developer, or was that our intent, or do the rules shift once it's been leased or sold? So I think that's a great question.
Okay, and the final thing that I wanted to mention was there are some people who've mentioned how difficult it was to work through this process. Well, it's not nearly as difficult as many people ran into with before we had Title 11, where the bits and pieces of tree code were scattered here, there, and in many cases were contradictory in different parts of the city code. So, you know, there are going to be some glitches when you have a new process, and I still think it's much better than what we had before, and I thank you for putting it into place and for now trying to fix it a little bit.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Catherine Garvin, and thank you so much for this opportunity to talk about something that's really important to me, nature and trees in Portland, where I was born. And what's also important to me is a shift in how I perceive trees. And why is this important? When my perception shifts to view trees to include values like safety, beauty, balance, and bliss, four of my favorite words that make me feel really good. And what I feel is missing and what I don't hear being talked about, aside from the physical value of trees or the mental analytical part of trees, but the emotional and sacred self that trees contribute to a community, whether they're owned by public lands or private. And I wanted to make mention of this card my mom sent me. And she wrote in this card that in 1915, Japan gifted America, probably not Portland maybe, dogwood trees and flowering cherry blossom trees to connect a friendship through nations by having the symbol of trees. So it's an example of how not only is it just a physical thing that people can buy and sell and trade and whatnot and cut down and make things out of, it has, you know, a sacred self too, an emotional self, a connection that we can't maybe contain in a box or put in a number. It's just a feeling that feels bad or good or what have you. So that felt really good to me, and I wanted to share that. So I promote the full life cycle of trees. I understand that trees don't live forever, but when trees die in the forest, in natural setting, they have long deaths, so they help other things live after they die. They don't just go away. They leave roots in the ground and keep the soil with the microorganisms that create a setting for carbon to be stored and then oxygen to be released. So I wanted to bring this other really cool picture I got out of the news register in McMinnville. And it says here, the madrone tree is called the tree, life of a tree, but I kind of inverted it and called it a tree of life because here it is. It actually used to populate this whole area along the West Coast. And as you can see, it has frogs and raccoons and birds and honeybees love this tree in October. It's a nectar-bearing honeybee tree and butterflies. And so I'm here to ask that we amend the code. I think it's just great that the people put in a lot of effort to do a good job, and now we're at a point where we can amend it and include some more things like the emotional and sacred self of a tree. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being here. Welcome.
Hi, my name's Jessica Deltek. I'm here with two of my daughters. We homeschool, so our classroom is by and large outside of the home and outside of mainstream education. We just moved here 4 months ago, and one of the things we were looking for were some old growth trees on our lot. So I can speak to the question you asked the developer earlier. We also would take an annual trip to Sequoia National Park. So when we found out this summer, when we were making our plans to move here, which, by the way, Portland won out over Maui for certain reasons that the people voted fluoride out of the water. I was so impressed to be potentially with a group of people who can collectively get together and who, you know, can change referendums and can change policies based on, you know, actual data and studies that are done, and not necessarily go because it's whatever's commerce is leading. And so part of the reason why when we found out this summer that there were the three sequoia trees and that they were threatened, we got as involved as we could from the distance that we were. Just so happened we were here this summer on 41st and Clinton and watched one of the 100-plus-year-old Douglas firs cut, and it was a really sad, sad movement. What was even sadder was the fact in order to protect the other ones on the corner of the lot, which if you were developing with a normal house, that corner lot, it would be really hard-pressed to say that the roots in the, it's in the very far corner are definitely going to mess up with the construction. And I know that's part of the issue with the developers. And it's really easy to say, let's just cut it all out so it doesn't mess with the foundation. But what was scary was the fact that in order to protect those trees, I had to go against, like, the legality of the city to be able to stand there, prevent people from doing their job to take down the other trees. The people who are there to cut the trees, that's their job. They're getting paid. I mean, there's all these people involved in the cycle, but unless you have something in place, I want to protect these large heritage trees for my children. I mean, part of their education comes from understanding biospheres and how we're all interconnected and how, like she was saying, you know, the roots, the way that a tree decomposes, all of these things are a part of what makes this such an amazing place. The reason why we moved to Portland, in part, is the trees. And to think that these amazing trees that are over 100 years old are threatened, and we watched one, that Douglas fir was 105 years old. The nickname of this town was Stump Town, something that I don't think anybody wanted to recreate, and I feel like we're coming in the middle of this battle of, like, preventing Portland from being another Stump Town. It's not a great word. It's really sad, and part of me bringing my children here is also to know that my voice, the probably about another 100 homeschoolers I have connected with who support wanting to have better tree protection in this city and the whole metro area, this is part of their legacy, their future, my grandchildren, you know. And we don't, if the sequoias or that Douglas that was cut, we can't get 100-plus tree back. Like someone said earlier, with what's going on with our, with the weather, with the changes, with the climate change, we don't know if the trees people are replanting to replace them will actually make it to 100 years or 35 years. So I'm invested in protecting the heritage trees and as many of the large trees as you can. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming. Okay, anyone else?
The last two I have signed up are Eileen Stark and Ted Labby.
Okay. Ted already spoke. Sorry, other Jim Labby, right. Brothers. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you for holding this hearing. My name is Eileen Stark, and I'm a local landscape designer and author. I'm here to speak for friends, clients, neighbors, and voiceless wild animals. As you've heard, Title 11 doesn't require tree preservation, despite its original intent, and a comprehensive overhaul needs to be funded and instigated as soon as possible. And I'd like to, I'd really like to see the focus expand from retaining massive trees, of which there are very few, to retaining younger trees and ecologically valuable native species, some of which never mature to a big size, such as madrone. And other trees, especially the majestic Oregon white oak, grow at such a slow rate that to reach even 30 inches could take as long as 100 years, depending on conditions. Mitigation is not preservation, especially when replacements are mostly small form non-natives that may never provide the ecological functions of the tree destroyed, including carbon sequestration. A recent study, partially performed in Oregon, on trees including Douglas firs, found that yet another reason to retain mature trees is that as trees mature, they found that they actually grow faster, which is the opposite of what we previously thought, and thus store more carbon as they age. Preservation means respecting and retaining trees and requiring that builders work around them and protect them, not pay to remove the measly one-third that are supposed to be preserved. Of course, none of the recommendations and proposals before you could completely protect trees from development, but I believe that the Urban Forestry Commission's recommendations comes closest. I've worked on some very small sites, and I can tell you that valuable, healthy trees certainly do exist on tiny lots, so amendments should not include an exemption for lots less than 5,000 square feet. I can also tell you that there are a lot of people, like you said, who choose their home because the yard or the neighborhood has a lot of trees, whether they're mature or younger. One of the main reasons my husband and I bought our home was due to the leafy neighborhood, but sadly, it's quickly losing many of its trees. Amendments should apply not only to trees on private property, but also trees on city, commercial, and industrial land. Wildlife that needs trees to survive doesn't care what type of land it's on. Finally, the 30 days notice to neighborhoods is great, but really doesn't give people the tools to do much more than send nasty emails to the developer. I'd like to see a Type 2 review be implemented whenever there are plans to destroy trees greater than 30 inches. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi there. My name is Ted Labby, and I live in North Portland. And today I'm here to represent the Portland nonprofit group DPAVE, which works to grow green spaces from our neglected pavement-plagued corners of the city. Thank you, Portland City Council, for taking steps to protect large, healthy trees. The city's Title 11 tree code suffers from inadequacies that require a fix in order to protect big trees in our neighborhoods. We share the concerns expressed by Portland Audubon Society in the requests outlined in the February 23 Urban Forestry Commission letter. And specifically, we'd ask you that you require an inch-for-inch mitigation for cutting down large, healthy trees in development and non-development situations with no cap. I'd encourage you to apply the new tree preservation and mitigation standards on commercial and industrial lands as well as to city and street trees. The city's comp plan economic opportunities analysis indicates there's a surplus of a commercial industrial lands, so an adequate supply cannot be used as an excuse to exclude these lands, which are among the city's most pavement-plagued and need more efforts to grow and preserve tree cover. Next, I'd encourage you to fully fund comprehensive development of Title 11 reform this year so that we can move ahead with the other things that need fixing. I appreciate your work, Amanda, on this, but I think we have more work to do, and we need the funding in order to do it. Lastly, I'd like to kind of come back to a point my brother made at the outset, which is let's not let city bureaus like PBOT, BES, the Water Bureau, follow a lower standard. I'm not in favor of sacrificing big old trees just so PBOT can put in a green street, or BES for that matter, can put in a green street feature. We should consider alternative street design standards in those situations before we go and start removing big old trees. And just to clarify, there are already allowances in the code that allow PBOT to plant instead of pay. So the exorbitant costs that you talked about earlier, Amanda, there are opportunities for PBOT to do mitigation in lieu of payment. And specifically, this is referenced in Section 11.50.040, Section 2, City and Street Trees. Two areas where we're not meeting our urban forestry goals are public right-of-ways and commercial industrial lands. So it's really important that we apply these fixes in those areas so that we can better meet our urban forestry goals. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Thanks very much. Okay, anyone else? So anyone else want to speak? Come on up, please. Sure. Come on up. Go ahead. We'll take everyone. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Whoever would like to go first.
Oh, okay. Well, hello. Thank you, commissioners, for allowing us the opportunity to discuss tree code here in Portland. My name is Allison. I'm a core activist with a bunch of local NGOs. I was part of the Eastmoreland Tree Action. I don't know if you remember, Mayor, but my son gave you the Happy Divesting Day balloon.
Yes.
Yes. I have been attending.
He's not disappointed in us either.
No, actually, I told him that we were coming. I picked him up early from school, came out here, and he was like, "We don't cut the trees, Mom." So serious about it. But I'm glad that he's picking it up. I wanted to speak to the commissioners, or commissioners, about this because I have a few questions. I'm a hydrology student. I've been an activist within the environmental sector for a really long time. And during the tree action in Eastmoreland, for me as a scientist, I wanted to see a little bit more discussion. I mean, I know everybody did what they could, but the impacts that the environment will, in the surrounding neighborhood area of trees that size being removed, it's like setting off a carbon bomb. Those trees around it are going to get sick. Wildlife is going to start to move and struggle. You're going to start to see neighbors really unhappy because birds aren't chirping, basically. And I really wanted to discuss the fact that we really need to rethink the impossibilities of neighbor having a say in the preservation of mature trees on private property, especially when there is a majority in favor of preserving those trees. We shouldn't be fighting with our neighbors in the name of nature, but rather be rallying to celebrate it. We really need to consider what we are really doing to the environment by demolishing our trees when our air and now our water are so polluted. Ultimately, we don't need to only be divesting from fossil fuels, but also biased development and environmental racketeering. Well, I guess at the end of the day, when I see trees this big, over 30 inches in diameter, being ripped out of the ground, I'm wondering why these aren't heritage trees. I'm wondering why we don't have an annual program designating a heritage tree. Every year, Portland should get a heritage tree, like Happy Arbor Day, here's a tree. You know what I mean? Why aren't we having more community programs to educate the public and children about the importance of these grandparent trees? So for me, commissioners, that's what I would really like to see. I mean, we're going to go back and forth over tree code for time and all eternity, but having the education, having the discussion is more important at the end of the day. Thank you.
We do have a heritage tree program. That the challenge is that the property owner has to agree to the mm-hmm. heritageness of the tree. Mm-hmm.
I just think that at the end of the day, like, I've seen off of Vancouver and Lombard, I saw an entire three trees ripped out of the ground, and the neighborhood all, I mean, it's lower income, it's North Portland, and I saw neighbors come out, and they were like, "We've been watching this for months, nobody cares, you know what I mean, we tried to buy the property, he jacked it up $20,000, we didn't have it. So now we have to watch these trees." And it is the saddest spot right now because they were the largest trees within a half mile of that neighborhood, of that spot. And every day, I won't even drive down Vancouver anymore because I just, it's a constant reminder. So.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Lorna Lyons, and I went to Reed back in the 70s and stayed for 7 years, and I returned 2.5 years ago from Hawaii where I was caring for my folks. And I wanted to just mention that their exceptional tree program, I get the sense that they're sort of comparables in the way that they also have a community where there's a lot of folks who have these trees who can't necessarily afford to take care of them, or, you know, there are issues around this, obviously, but they have a much more robust tree, exceptional tree program. I'd understood that you guys had to put a cap on the heritage trees here. So I just wanted to sort of introduce this as something that you could perhaps look at for useful information around the way that Honolulu did it, and that, in fact, I think they call them the mayor's exceptional tree list. So if you want something positive there, I offer that. But the main thing that I wanted to say is my big point was basically time is money. We all know this, and that with the exceptional trees, it is literally true. And that what I specifically wanted to connect the dots on, in case no one else had done it, is that suddenly Portland is really concerned about air quality. and issues around how we scrub the air, and the trees do this for us. And these mature trees with these huge biomass can do a lot to allow us to have communities where our city planning benefits from jobs and income generated by small industry in mixed-use neighborhoods. We want all of that here. We don't want to have to, you know, keep everything all separated. It's part of